At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Listen, man, exciting things are going. We've got a lot popping. I've been working on a super secret project for Travel Channel, and hopefully they'll be releasing that information soon. But keep watching Travel Channel updates, folks. You can follow them on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and find out what's going on. But we've got a couple of cool specials coming up that I'll be a part of, and I believe one is going to be airing possibly even this week. So keep your eyes peeled for that. We've got a lot of other cool things taking place as well, and looks like back on the road filming for the Holzer Files.
Nice.
So the world is opening, Tim.
That it is. Yeah.
Scary and opening, but it's opening slowly. We'll see what happens. Speaking of the Travel Channel and the world opening back up, the world is opening back up to us tomorrow, Tim. A brand new series debuts on the Travel Channel, Buried Worlds with Don Wildman.
Oh, yes.
And yeah, I had a chance to watch the first episode, and with my fascination in vampires, I love this kickoff episode, first of all. But the series looks fantastic, and we've been a fan of Mr. Wildman's for a while, of course, with Mysteries at the Museum and his other programs he's worked on. And he's joining us today for the first time ever on Darkness Radio, Don Wildman. Oh. Thank you for being here, sir.
Oh, it's very nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's great. I mean, the series kicks off tomorrow. You've got this first episode where you are out in search of information regarding vampire legend lore and belief systems. And, first of all, I love the filming. It's beautifully done, beautifully shot, and the story thread is great. Were you surprised, though? I mean, going out into the world, 21st century, to realize that there are still cultures that don't just talk about this in the past as, you know, part of our heritage, but still believe in these elements of the high strangeness and supernatural elements like vampires.
We're going to have a very good conversation right now because this entire series was a gigantic surprise to me anyway. Then we went out there and found amazing things that I'm not just saying that because I'm selling a TV show. I'm like, I was not expecting anything that happened to me to happen to me. And it was one revelation after another all over the world. And the episode you're talking about is primarily Bulgaria. And it was, we went looking for, here's the thing. I got to back up here. First of all, can you hear me fine?
You're coming through great. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Sorry. I'm one of the millions in their, you know, houses, not knowing if I'm really communicating. So listen, I've been with Travel Channel for a long time. And, first of all, big fan of the Holzer Files, by the way.
Thank you.
My job has been as a history guy. You know, I was going to say historian, but I'm not a professional historian. That's my gig. Like, I visit worlds that I'm not an expert in and ask the questions that sort of ordinary people would ask in hopefully some sort of educated, you know, tone of voice. So I was starting a new show with Travel, which was kind of in the line of other shows I've done in the past where we sort of went underground and did tunnels and stuff like that. And it was sort of on its way to being kind of a straight history show. And then things got changed up a lot. And so they wanted the show to become more of a paranormal investigation, which was a complete surprise to me. And I said, wow, that's interesting. You know, I've always been really fascinated by the questions involved in this, and they get kind of heady. So just a warning, that's what I'm really curious about, is the kind of, wow, weird philosophical and even theological questions involved in the paranormal. It's pretty heavy stuff. But this was about going out and trying to find the rituals and the people who actually still practice these things in the world. And there are tons of them, you know, especially the cultures like Haiti and Peru, where we went to all these sort of ancient places, these cultures with these huge ancient root systems, you know, that have enormous cultural backlogs, you know, that people can draw on, unlike here in America. So, yeah, it was all surprising to me, and it was very alive, and it wasn't what I expected, which was, I thought there would be kind of almost a quaintness to it, you know, in terms of how we interacted with people. You know, I thought people would be selling things. I thought they'd be sort of peddling ideas. It was the opposite. People are very passionate. People are very earnest and very authentic about what they're doing, by and large. Of course, there were exceptions to the rule, but sure, I was totally surprised and delighted by the experience of learning an entirely different way of looking at the world, which is what I find so fascinating about it.
Buried Worlds with Don Wildman premieres on Travel Channel Monday, June 8th at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. And it's a quest that flips the switch on the paranormal and the supernatural, shedding new light on the dark origin of legends and myth. And, you know, I got to tell you, as a guy who's been doing this for 14 years now on radio, I appreciate your tact in the way you dealt, especially in this first episode, with the people who have these beliefs. There's never that tongue-in-cheek roll of the eyes to the camera like, oh, my God, can you believe it? I love how you settle into the culture and are just more amazed and kind of drawn into their world as opposed to being an onlooker who's just hanging out with them. And the way they react to you seems very open, and I think that's what really led to some of the best scenes, was watching how comfortable they felt with you in showing you their practices, showing you their ideas, and not feeling like they were being made a fool of or shamed in their practices of vampire hunting and witchcraft and ghost, you know, communication. You're along for that ride, and I love the fact that you're like, you know, I didn't know what to expect when I came in here, but I'm really kind of getting freaked out. And I don't know if it's them psyching me out or the feeling of this location or that there's something here. And I love the fact that you weren't willing to just eliminate and say, oh, I'm just psyched out by these guys. You could tell by looking at you and watching you through the investigation that you're not quite sure what to believe about all of this.
Well, thank you for noticing. I do try to do that. I mean, you know what it's like. You meet people on the site often. You know, you shake hands with people as you meet them. Sometimes these things have been arranged for you, and you know, you pre-produce these segments, but sometimes you don't really know these people until you meet them, and then proceed to spend more time with them than you know you spend with your aunt and uncle. It's like this incredible experience that you have that is so deep, especially in this world, that you become friends, you become, you know, there's a relationship you have to strike up. So far be it for me to judge anybody in the world anyway, but certainly not someone who is coming from an entirely different view. I don't have much of this in my past. I mean, for better or worse, this has not been part of my life. I've never seen a ghost. I've never had paranormal experiences. I have been fascinated by them, you know, as anybody is. It's an interesting world, even, you know, without having done a television show about it. It's just a colorful and interesting world. But what interests me, you know, in shooting a TV show about it are the human beings involved and their particular angle on these things. It's really kind of amazing how deep these subject matters go. And in order for someone to become an expert, they not only have to have an experience about it themselves, but also understand the history and the process and the rituals behind it all. And these people are very smart and very deep, you know, still waters and all that stuff. And so I found myself in awe of the people I was hanging out with when I really didn't know what to expect. And this went for everybody. It was, you know, in Bulgaria, we went around with a team of experts, these guys who actually make this part of their life, where they search out vampires, you know, vampire things. Let's talk about that for a bit, because I think that's in the first show. Okay, so this is heavy duty stuff. There is a mountaintop village, which we've been told the GPS coordinates for, and off we go. Now, if anybody doesn't understand how TV is done, you wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you, your DP, your director of photography, sound guy, et cetera, this small group of you meet groggily in the lobby room of your motel. You know, they're not fancy places. And off you go in the car to some unknown spot. Well, in this show, in this series, these unknown spots are, we're meeting a vampire team. And you're like, I don't even know what these guys do, let alone, you know, are we expecting to find a vampire? I mean, these are literally the questions that are going around the car as we're driving along at 8 o'clock in the middle of nowhere in Bulgaria. And then sure enough, the coordinates lead us all the way up this winding road to a truly creepy mountaintop village. There's nobody there. It's abandoned. These are all 19th century hovels, farmhouse kind of things. You know, at some point there was some lively village up there that belonged to sheep herders or somebody like that. Well, the rumor is, and the thread we've pulled on here, is that there's a problem in the surrounding villages. They've been finding animals that have been slayed in the forest. They've been finding their animals getting sick and all this kind of stuff. And the rumor is that there's some sort of force up there, a malevolent force, which in this part of the world, Bulgaria, Romania, often gets called vampire. It's sort of a general term, I think. They didn't really, you know, we're not talking about Count Dracula here. We're talking about a dark force. So we have met these men, three of them, who come from Sofia area, I believe it was, and they drive up and meet us in this area. Totally delightful people, you know, completely different kinds of people. One guy's sort of a militaristic sort of, you know, sort of a tough guy. He's actually a very sweet man, but sort of looks the part, you know, of a sort of professional wrestler type. And then there's another guy who's kind of artsy, sort of waifish, and a third guy who's sort of, you know, your average build and all the rest. But they're very different kind of personalities. They barely know each other, but they know each other from this community. And they meet up, and they have a whole bunch of rituals that they go through. And what we're doing in this village is we're trying to find evidence that there was truly something spiritual happening here, something paranormal happening. We meet at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's going to be a nighttime ritual. Together, we begin to move around the house as soon as it's dark.
Now, Donna, I want to ask you really quickly, though. When you get a chance to meet these guys and you're going vampire hunting,
yeah,
you can get the sense of how earnest someone is when you're talking. I mean, was there ever a sense that these guys were
making it up? No.
Not maybe even making it up, but just play acting as if, you know, I mean, no. This is something we're going to show the traveler. This isn't the real deal.
Nope. I can really tell you, because I certainly would have, you know, told that story many times of like, oh, my God, you know, it was quite the opposite. These guys were very passionate about it. There was something, the only thing I can tell you that left me off balance was I never quite understood the entity we were searching for. I think I asked that several times, but I left with a more spiritual feeling than one of an actual, you know, body or an apparition or some sort of thing.
Right. And that was an interesting aspect because, again, having had such a fascination with vampire culture and lore, I liked that your show introduced a new aspect to this. And I don't want to give that away because, again, if I know our listeners are keen on this kind of programming. Tune in. This is a newer version of the history and actually makes more sense to me regarding the concept of vampires than the original legend and lore that most of us are familiar with. But please go ahead.
Well, you've redirected me in thinking. I did a show about Dracula. I did two shows about Dracula from the historical perspective in two other series. And the one came, it was a Travel Channel show about 3 years ago. And we went to Romania, Transylvania, the sort of classic story of Vlad the Impaler and all that stuff. But as a bit of color, as a bit of backdrop, we went to a village and talked to very old people, some ancient people, elderly people, and about their opinions. And this was done through a translator. These were really just villagers. And we went through the one woman had said that her son had become a vampire. I can't remember the word for it. There was another term for it.
Go on.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. And we walked through a cemetery, and we walked to her son's grave, and she told us the story about this happening and how he comes back and forth. Very vague memory, first of all, it was a couple of years ago, but also it was through a translator, so I'm not remembering. What I remember is the visceral emotion of this woman and the way that she felt this spirit, felt this experience of hers. That was sort of corresponded by an older man, an old man in the village, who I went with into his living room and sat down and talked to the fact that he believed his wife was coming back and that she hadn't been released from something. And it was all very hard to understand. And he was very emotional himself. That was the feeling like I had of it, that these were real feelings and these were real experiences for these people. And that whether or not they absolutely had proof that this was the way it was, this was how they were identifying things. And they felt it in their heart that this had happened. And you can see from that how this becomes more cultural than is necessarily paranormal. It's all side by side and very real and very authentic, you know? So I find that fascinating, not only because we're talking about some possible entity that's floating out there, but it's also very interesting because it creates the layers of society that really fascinate me, that make every day kind of alive because people are thinking so hard about what's going on. So it was cool.
I've been to Romania 3 times, and it is truly a beautiful country and an amazing place to visit. But the supernatural element of their lives, it's fascinating because really they don't. It's not something they talk about openly. Obviously, everywhere you go, there are Dracula souvenirs to buy. But when you get down and start talking to some of the locals, and they do open up to you, it's quite compelling to see the richness of their history, their concepts of where they've come from, what these elements mean to them. And then on top of it, you know, then there's this speculation. And it's funny because they, as you said, they don't really refer to them as vampires. It's the Strigoi, which is kind of a ghostly vampire. And it's just such a different, literally a different world. And I'm always captivated by that when I visit Romania, because again, it's the 21st century, Don, and these people, it's not like they're backwards. It's not like they're stupid or ignorant. It's just that this is such a part of their culture. It makes you question, what are we overlooking? Because maybe we're just uncomfortable with what the truth might be.
I think it's very, not simple, that's the wrong word for it. There's a very direct cause and effect here. When you live in a country like we do, that's pretty new, and it has a very strong knee-jerk reaction to pretty much everything. We come from the pioneer legend. You know, we come from, I can go from here to there and make my life better. There's always new, you know, right around the corner. When you are raised, especially in poverty, or at least in very simple conditions in those parts of the world, their knee jerk is much more spiritual, much deeper, and much more thousands of years of this has gone before them. And the sense of going somewhere else isn't part of life. And so it's more generational, it's more layered. And I think that's where all this is rooted, in places like Romania and Bulgaria and stuff, certainly in the hill towns, that people have that feeling. But that's true of the American South and places like that, that there's much more of a sense of heritage, spiritual heritage, than certainly my world, which is outside of New York City. But I think the myths that we live with inform our opinion of this realm we're talking about.
And again, when you're out there, and I love the element for people, just so you know, it's not just vampire related. You've got the spiritual aspect of ghosts. You've got the vampire, and then even witchcraft and lore associated with this first episode. And it was really, it was really enthralling to kind of watch all of these things kind of marry together and see how, even though they're different sects of investigators or different sects of beliefs, they all have common threads that run through them.
Yeah.
And the way that they protect themselves, the way they engage the spiritual element, and the way that they try to eliminate these negative forces from the locations. At any time during these situations, was there ever anything strange? I know working on the Holzer files, it drives me nuts. I tell my one camera on my forehead because something's always happening off camera and nobody's pointing in that direction. Was there ever any weird element that you wish would have made it into one of these episodes that you saw firsthand that didn't get caught?
Are you kidding? I mean, that's like all the time.
Right.
We were in, have you ever been to Matthews County, Virginia? Do you know what I'm talking about when I said it? Okay. So that's that's a name drop for the paranormal world that probably a lot of people know about. Matthews County is a Chesapeake Bay county in Virginia, not too far from Washington. It's in that world, kind of Hampton Bay, that area. And it's reportedly the most haunted, one of the most haunted counties in America. And it's one of the shows that we do. I can't remember which one, it's scheduled, but it's about the theory that the Roanoke, the colony of Roanoke, didn't go the way people all think they went, but went in a northern direction and would have landed at this particular place, which truly does hold up to historical inquiry. There's a lot of reasons to believe that this would have happened, and there's even evidence that they indeed came there, which we investigate and locate. But we went out with, I met with towns members. You know, I had an AA meeting with town members who had all seen ghosts.
Right.
It was crazy. And, if there was ever a moment, I can honestly tell you, I don't want to be, self-righteous about this whole thing. Of course, there are moments you don't feel like doing something in any job, let alone being a TV host. And so here we were like, 8 o'clock, we got to go meet with everybody from town. And, it's a big eye roll. And then we end up in this circle. And these people are for real. And they're really nice people, and they're very serious people, people with jobs. These are real upstanding individuals. And they are all telling us that within this square mile of particular land within the town, everybody has had this experience where they've heard something or talked about something. This is just by way of your question. So we're down there in this plot of land down there, which is kind of a scrubby, swampy area. That used to be much closer to the ocean. Therefore, it was more where the boats would land. And we had been there several times. We sort of overdid this particular site. And everybody therefore is very casual about being there. And the whole camera crew is behind the Suburban, getting their stuff together. And I'm out in front because I got to do the swamp sequence. I got to go into the water. So I'm putting my waders on and I'm all by myself. And to my right is this thick growth of sort of bamboo reeds, very, very thick. And as I'm getting ready, I hear kunk, 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 the sound of footsteps, really identifiably human. It was not like there's a deer, over there. And it was only like 5 feet to my right. And they continue on long enough that my producer comes around and says, "So we're almost ready," that I go, "Do you listen to that?" And we both hear chunk, chunk, chunk. And he says, "Oh, it's got to be a hunter," and walks away casually, right? And so I'm like, okay, it's a hunter, I guess. And I get all my stuff on and we go shooting. It's not until days later that I say, there was no place for a hunter in there. What's more, there was no hunter would be hunting next to a camera crew getting started without saying, "Hi, I've got a gun in my hand, by the way." Just wouldn't have, the unlikelihood of this particular moment would not have happened. And so I realized, oh my God, did I just have one of those experiences? Because this is the place where people talk about it. They not only talked about hearing things, they saw things. One of those people in that meeting saw a pirate ship float across his path while hunting, a full-on pirate ship apparition, and somebody looking at him from the deck. And I was, you hear that and you're like, what the hell? But these were the stories that these people told. And then I sort of had my own experience that you can possibly say, if I was more attuned, if I was more on it, I would, ironically, of course, I'm hosting a TV show about ghosts, you would think. But that was one of those moments that I'm like, God damn, that's the actual moment we needed on camera. And we missed it. So, yes, it happens all the time.
That episode is Demon Woods. It'll premiere on Monday, June 22nd at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Remember, every Monday you can tune in, set your DVRs. And again, do us a favor, friends. When you set your DVRs, if you can't watch it live, which is always best for your favorite shows, make sure you watch it within the first 2 to 3 days of having it on your DVR so it counts towards the ratings and keeps your favorite programs on the air.
Now, wow, I never knew that.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, the ratings don't count after day three, I guess, on our on all of the DVR boxes across the world. They like that first 3 day window, and then everything else is counted, but not really.
Interesting.
Yeah. So see, you listen to shows like this, you learn.
That's true. Well, now, by the way, you come highly recommended. I mean, the PR people that set me up were like, "Oh, you got to talk to this guy. He's great." So whoever is listening to you, I want you to know what a good reputation you have behind the scenes.
I appreciate that. Tim, see, we fooled them, Tim. We fooled them.
Yes.
They've convinced Don Wildman to do our show. There's got to be. Don doesn't realize you and I are just on a couple of tin cans with a string between us playing on our Play School audio recorder.
Well, now, Dave, they're high quality steel cans that we got from the 40s from some rations, some sea rations that we got from the Army. So, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, we had to empty them out during the COVID crisis.
We did. Yeah.
But here and amongst you.
Yeah.
Now,
do we have, sorry to interrupt you, do we have time to talk now? Because before we get off, I have to give you my theory about the paranormal. So don't let me forget about it.
No, right? we have plenty of time. We've got another half an hour together. So please introduce us to your theory of paranormal before we take a quick break.
Well, I'll tease it because it needs some more time than that. I just have a theory, which I constructed, you know, in the back of a van going around the world, studying something I'd never paid attention to before very much, which was ghosts and paranormal stuff, that there is really completely an explanation in my mind for this. At least it is a gateway to an explanation. And it has everything to do with science, which was what was refreshing to me. Here I've been, like everybody else, grows up with the sort of mythology, the Hollywood idea of ghosts and paranormals and evil. It's always evil. And I was like, I don't buy it. You know, I can't do a TV show about it because I just can't pretend that I'm just going to be acting, you know, horror all the time. And I don't want to. So what's the real reason behind this stuff? And so day in, day out of this stuff, country after country, I started saying, you know what happens? They have figured out that existence is beyond our understanding. Never mind paranormal. The actual string theory world, the whole of this thing, the bottom line question of the Big Bang. Okay, I buy it. I do. I'm a believer in science. But what happened before that? What was there before? You know, like those questions, those big target questions of existence come right back to paranormal thinking in my mind. And that spirits are either able to pass into that realm, which exists according to physicists at Columbia, or they can't. And they can't because something has gone wrong that they're not able to sort of meld with the energy of the universe, at which point they sort of bounce off of it. And those are the spirits that we're running into in limbo before they're able to sort of disappear into that thing. And I don't know what would energetically prevent them from going, but perhaps it was some human issue unresolved, as was covered in so many of the Holzer files. But that would be the bump in the road in my mind that would keep something in limbo, because otherwise it would just pass on. And those are the vast majority of human spirits you've never heard from again. Why? Why wouldn't they all be running around having a good time? They would, because they're gone. They peacefully passed into that string theory world of existence. Does this hold up to your thinking at all?
I like it. Yeah. I mean, we're always open to these newer concepts, and where I started 14 years ago in believing what ghosts are to where I am today, it follows right into that, because Tim and I have been discussing for years more of the string theory concept of what a ghost is and what are we bouncing into? And is it necessarily even a dead person? Is, you know, in 1930 in this house, is the owner of that house seeing strange shadowy figures walking around that is just reflections of us from the future? Mm. And they're seeing it through the ripples of time. I'm not sure. That's what's so fascinating about this. And I don't know that there's any one right answer. It may be elements of each one.
I just think that the truth of existence, everything we operate with on in our temporal lives is sensory based, is human based. And we judge all that on the rise and fall of the sun every day. Like, there's really very specific things that dictate our understanding of existence, and they're all human based. Once you take that away, that earthly existence away, you're into an entirely different realm that starts talking about all that stuff. You know, if you stripped away all of those things, it's a very strange thing to happen, you know? And so I think there's this sort of middle ground that that is that place, because there's just too much. It's almost like the alien thing. There's too many reports not to acknowledge the fact that it's true to some degree. You know, not every single thing, of course. And yes, there are discs flying around that people take pictures of, but there's just so much undeniable reportage of this stuff that you can't believe it's not true to some degree. Same goes for the paranormal. You know, too many smart people have seen ghosts to say it's not true. I love that it's a mystery. I totally do. I think it will probably always be a mystery, because the ideas of existence that we're talking about are too far afield to ever, you know, grapple with for real. But and thus TV shows can be made forever and ever. Thank God.
Amen to that. You know, the one thing I will say before we bounce into break, though, it's interesting to me because, you know, I follow that narrative and that thread. But the problem is then you see how there's this division line, let's just say, in our country right now, and not taking a side, not asking you to take a side. But there's a division line. People are either for or against the way leadership works, and people will see what they want to see depending on what the belief system is that they brought into the situation. That makes me wonder about the paranormal. I mean, where some might see, this is glaringly obvious that what this person is doing is completely insane. Other people are saying it's glaringly obvious that what that person is doing is exactly necessary. Mm. And to both sides, they're right. And it's much like the supernatural. That's why I always wonder, you know, I mean, does it fall under that umbrella of there are so many people experiencing it, therefore we can't just dismiss it? Or can these people be wrong? Is there something else going on? And it's hard to say. I wish there
was. Well, you got Harry Houdini, you know, just
right
debunking people all over the place. And, I don't know. I come from a very sort of logical family, and I, you know, my background was to sort of learn enough to enjoy it and then dismiss it because it doesn't work in your own reality. I grew up realizing that wasn't the most interesting way to live. You know, like these people that I would rather have there be a living mystery in my life by opening myself up to possibilities. And so that goes for history as well, you know, different ways of thinking politically and culturally as well as paranormally. But that's what we're talking about now.
We need to take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more. Our guest Don Wildman with us. Remember, set your DVRs. Buried Worlds with Don Wildman begins airing Monday on Travel Channel. And again, you can set your DVRs, watch it. Watch it live if you can. That helps the ratings the best. Or watch it within the first 3 days of it being on recording to keep your favorite shows on the air. We'll be back. Stay tuned. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio.
Hey, hey, hey. This is NFL Hall of Famer Ray Lewis. I'm excited to announce the launch of my new podcast, Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast. I'll be talking with friends, family members, old teammates, athletes, celebrities, moguls, and guess what? I'll be talking to you. Listen, this is all in the search for everyday greatness. So I'm asking you to come along with me on this ride. Download new episodes of Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast, every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on PodcastOne.com. It's not what you have, it's what's inside of you that actually inspires greatness.
We're back. Darkness Radio's on the air. Buried Worlds with Don Wildman is due tomorrow. That's Travel Channel Monday, June 8th.
And for those of you listening after the first episode is aired, thank God the Travel Channel likes to replay their programs. I'm sure you'll find a replay of it, but set your DVR so you don't miss any further episodes of the program. We started talking about the premiere episode with the vampires and kind of all that went into that investigation. You touched on the Demon Woods episode, which will premiere on Monday, June 22nd, talking about the lost Roanoke colony. You've got a lot of great series episodes, Voodoo's Dark Magic, the Nazi Supernatural Weapons, Temples of Doom, Devil's Swamp, Curse of the Druids, Curse of the White City. So you've got quite a bit in this. Was there, if you look back on it right now, after, you know, having had a little chance to be separated from what you did, is there an episode that's really kind of sticking with you even more now that you've kind of had a chance to marinate in the experiences and the history you uncovered?
Yeah, well, I guess the final one is the Honduras one, but that's a very long story, and I'll get to that in a few minutes. The you were just running through that list, and you know from shooting TV, you know, you have these outstanding moments that sort of, you know, vibrate in your memory afterwards, because, you know, shooting a TV show is kind of like it's all over the place. It's sometimes out of sequence. It's all kind of a mishmash of things, and it gets all stitched together later in post. So I remember experiences more than I remember episodes. One experience that just leapt to mind, I feel like I'm in therapy here, because that's what you do in therapy. You know, I want to talk about my father. This was in Ireland. Okay, so there were episodes in Peru and Bulgaria and, you know, really hinterland stuff. And then there's Ireland outside of Dublin. Well, this is a very, well, you know, first world world. And so I was, you know, expecting kind of to sort of visit these stories. And it was also Celtic curses. We were really telling a story. To anyone joining this conversation, I have to hasten to, you know, put some context here. This was about a guy with a fascination about history going into the world of the paranormal and finding the context of paranormal stories within the history of these areas, namely, you know, where do curses come? Why are vampires, you know, considered to be the a force of evil in these places and so forth? And how does that very present, very alive ritual or curse or whatever exist within the modern day place? That was kind of the gig I was on. And so when we went to Ireland, I was expecting more of a kind of friendly, here's a castle with a ghost. And then we went to Malahide Castle, which is about as much as everything I'm talking about. Okay, Malahide Castle, yeah. Thank you. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I do.
So that's a big time glamour spot. You know, you want to get married in a nice place in Dublin, it's Malahide Castle. This place is groomed and very high end. And so they were very kind to us, and they do a lot of ghost stuff, which was surprising. And so we ended up there about 9 o'clock at night, and I'm alone. One day I hope I have the wherewithal to write a book, because my experiences in all realms of TV are always the best stuff happens off camera. And you're hanging out with the security guys down at the, you know, the desk while the camera guys are figuring out where the lighting is going to be upstairs. And what do? You talk like people, you know? And I said, so what do you really, have you ever seen anything? Boom. They had stories to tell. Like, this guy's like, oh, kidding me? I'm sitting here, you know, a couple weeks ago, and I hear this bam upstairs. I'm the only person in the castle. He walks up there. He sees some shape go by, and he's like, oh, it's that one again. You know, like, they're so casual about it, but they were absolutely dead on certain that this place was fully haunted and had been forever. They had seen things, had seen people, all kinds of stuff. So I go off with this, with the guide, who literally is the guide. And that's sometimes a good thing or a bad thing. You know, you don't want it to be too, you know, you don't want her too good at it. You want a real person with a real experience. But this woman was just adorable, and she was very, very articulate. So it was a pleasure to be with her. And we go to the big dining room. Have you been there? That big dining room with the portraits?
Yep.
All right. So the story of this place, as you know, I'll tell everybody, anybody else, is there was this entertainer, this MC, and he was kind of a dwarf. He was a small guy in the
Puck.
I don't know, Puck, exactly. He was in the 1500s, I think, 1500s, right? And he would MC the after party of every big dinner they had. And during this dinner, or during his time there, he fell in love with this noble woman who was apparently very beautiful and a part of this family. And I think married and all the rest of it. But he was attached to this woman. And of course, she couchldn't love him back. So it's a story of unrequited love. And he commits suicide. He hangs himself off the balcony that he used to entertain from. It's just so amazing. You can't write this stuff. And so that was one of those stories. It's like, oh, that's a good story. But, you know, it's like, that's like Charles Dickens or something like that. Except for the fact that my guide says, so I was running a tour through here 2 weeks ago from the time we were talking. And suddenly the candles on the candelabra flew upwards toward the ceiling, you know, in the presence of all these people in the room.
Right.
And I said, wait a minute, right? Wait, you're telling me, I'm standing there with this candelabra in front of me, that one of those candles just spontaneously flew up to the ceiling. She said, not just one, but two. I'm like, what the hell? You're kidding me. Did that just freak you out? Did everybody scream and run from the room? She said, I had a couple of strange reactions, but mostly everybody was, you know, ready to embrace the fact that it was Puck doing what Puck does. You know, that's just one of those things. But that was a story more about the guys in the security room, you know, telling you behind the scenes what they experience, which happens all the time.
Right. And being out there, it was great when we were in Ireland. Every place we'd stop, they'd, oh, what are you here for? Oh, we're investigating the paranormal. And this was just with our listeners that we go on these trips once a year with. Everybody had stories to tell you of Malahide Castle. Everybody's been there or has a family member that was there and had something weird happen. And in those instances, it's hard, right? You can't just, those are the stories, like you said earlier, you can't just dismiss it summarily because there are so many people from so many walks of life that would swear by it, that this legitimately took place in the location.
Well, I got very comfortable with the idea, and I welcomed, obviously it was good for my job for me to be open to all this stuff. But I also saw, you know what, I'm just going to cave in here because it's a more interesting life if you allow this realm to exist and assume itself. The thing that's always freaked me out is like, if the ghosts exist, then do I need to be self-conscious? Like, is my father, my poor deceased father, hanging around? Like, how do you deal with that, you know, as a real part of life? I mean, this is your world. So what do you do? Do you think in terms of it being around you all the time or just something you can call up?
Right. That's the $10,000 question. And I think it just depends on the situation. You know, I certainly, there are moments I'm sure hoping my mom's not standing around watching. So, you know, we push that part of our concepts to the side. And I guess, you know, it just, again, depends on what you feel the spiritual realm is. Are these people not always amongst us? But then you talk to mediums and psychics and sensitives and people who say that we are just surrounded constantly by that world. So it's impossible. Are we as visible to them as they are to the mediums, though? You know, are we coexisting on a plot of land, and to them we're the ghosts? There are ghosts and we're constantly hearing these things, and it just is a recycled culture. I'm not quite certain. You know, I'd like to think that really the spirits are there for when we call on them, instead of them feeling lashed to us, that they are not able to move on. But with that, I can't explain why some areas are so, you know, just saturated with supernatural activity.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's generational in many ways, just people being there so long. But, and also the painful part of it, you know, there seems to be such a, it doesn't seem coincidental that people, you know, die horrible deaths and can't deal with it. And that locks them in place or something, you know, seems to be the case.
Here's an interesting element I'll bring up to you, just as probably one of the first people we've spoken to off, you know, on the show about it. One of our listeners sent in a really fascinating concept. Don, if I asked you, most ghosts that are seen, what time era do they seem to fall in? Most ghosts,
medieval to colonial period, I would say, you know, right. in the 15, 16, 1700 kind of thing. Yeah.
So there's that. It always seems to be around wartime eras, right? The early 1800s or the early 1900s when the spiritualist movement was there. There's so much loss that took place. So many people that are are harboring these sad emotions and wanting to reconnect, and these cyclical spiritual moments that open, if all of these people are focused on communicating, are we creating this bubble? Like we've torn open the fabric between that world and here. Is that why there are so many ghosts from certain eras? Because we have called so many forward without knowing how to put them back.
Again, we're applying human logic to something that I think doesn't even touch humanity when you're there. You know, when you enter into that realm, it's more physics than science, than humanistic. Nonetheless, it seems to make logical sense to me that there would be a process through which these spirits were engaged, meaning that over time, whatever they were needing to work out would have been worked out. So they drop away, they disappear, they move on. And so we're seeing that, you know, more recent group of people who are still sort of new at the game. I mean, a few hundred years they've been working this thing out.
Right.
And so over time, they too will drop away, and a new group, you and I, will be haunting someone, you know, 100 years from now, hopefully.
Now, let's dive into some of the other episodes that you're looking at this season. And before we do that, though, since we're kind of on the supernatural element, do you have any concern for yourself that really kind of diving this deeply in, you know, examining these things and opening yourself to this, will this start to call things to you? Do you have any concern for that going forward?
Well, the creepiest thing of all was not apparitions or knocks in the night. It was the demonology idea. That's what creeped me out. And the idea that demons, according to these experts we talked to, would attach themselves to people and animals, you know, anything, attach themselves and sort of cling on like a virus or a curse. And so that creeped me out. You know, and that made me uncomfortable that I was exposing myself, and, you know, the crew and I would always talk about it, that we were like asking for it, you know, just doing this thing. And we never did any kind of cleansing. We never did any kind of thing. Oh, that's not true. I should say that then in Haiti, let me segue to talking about voodoo. We did an episode in Haiti that was only the second episode we did. So it was all kind of figuring itself out. But I was fascinated by this because anybody who watches this show, I mean, the vast majority of Americans are only aware of Haiti in the most thumbnail sort of way. I was certainly one of them. And I consider myself pretty worldly. I've traveled a lot. And Haiti was off my radar, except that I knew that it was this impoverished place without, you know, much hope and all these sort of very dramatic ideas about it that were true from the news, but of course that's not the case in total. And so sure enough, we ended up in Cap Haitien, which is the city to the north, as opposed to Port-au-Prince, which is in the south. And it's a very old place. It's very colonial, and the original capital of Haiti back in those days. And we met a woman who was a very well-known voodoo priestess named Mambo Ingrid. And she had been friendly in a way of letting us into this world beyond that which most people get to. Certainly white guys from Northeast America don't normally traipse around this world. And they welcomed me in with a very cleansing ritual. As a matter of fact, there was a lot of water involved. I was kind of baptized, and I had a lot of leaves shaking on me, and lots of people were singing around me, and I was really sort of initiated into this group. And one of the guys, the old man in the trio that was circling me doing this ritual, told me later that he had seen when the spirit had entered me, which is what they were trying to do. They were allowing this friendly spirit to come into me. And I sort of looked at him. I said, well, I wasn't aware of that. You know, I didn't have a moment when I was sort of slammed on the forehead in that Pentecostal way at all. Nor did I want to pretend at it. Like, I didn't want to show that sort of disrespect, you know, by pretending. So therefore, I was very cognizant of everything that was happening to me the whole time. But he said he saw this moment flash. And Mambo Ingrid was listening to the conversation, and she said, "You don't even know what happened to you. That's how this happens. This is how this goes." So I have no bearings of whether it really worked or not, but it was part of that ritual. We then went to a cave, which was a very precious experience for me. Not the cave, but the whole going to Haiti. Because if I have anything to offer the world, it's the fact that I've been gifted this career that allows me to travel to places most Americans don't know as well as they should, and certainly cultures that they need to embrace and understand. We're on the earth together. This is a pan-global world we're in. This is not an America-first world we're in. And if I can be of any kind of agency in that regard, I'm grateful. So Haiti is a good example of a place that the average American would be sort of lost as to what it all means. So this was one way in. I did not understand how much voodoo really was a part of the culture. You know, something from the movies, of course, but I didn't really understand how it had sort of layered into the world. Some people reject it. A lot of people in Haiti want no part of it. You know, it's almost like, you know, those weirdos, and we don't trust them. Part of it comes from, again, the sensational aspect of it. But as I learned more about it, it was more the religious aspect of it that really I learned about. So we end up going out into the woods in a coffee plantation and finding this cave that is well known as being a place where the Indians, oh, I'm forgetting their name now, the Native American tribe there, Taino tribe, mixed with the fugitive slaves, the enslaved people who would run for the hills, you know, to get away from their owners. This is when the French ran the place. And those two cultures mixed up. And that's where the original voodoo begins, with an African and a tribal Native American mix happening. And this particular cave was one of those places where it was like a church to that story. And we went out there with a big expert in a professor of voodoo, of theology in Haiti. And we witnessed a goat sacrifice, which was insanely dramatic. And very, very religious in that sort of way. Like, you could take a Baptist church and stick it right into that cave, and you would be sort of in the same world, that Southern Baptist kind of thing, with lots of chanting, lots of dancing, lots of drums going on. And then this poor innocent goat, which has to be sacrificed to the gods. It was all in the context of a hurricane heading towards us, which was Hurricane Dorian. And it chased us off the island. This ritual they were doing had something to do with that. And so we were all feeling very dramatic, like these things really matter and these things really count in today's world. This is segues right into, if you want to talk about the paranormal, you got to talk about the religious. You know, that to me is, like we were talking before, you can't right. Angels and demons and all the rest of the stuff that's in the Bible without being a believer in paranormal. You're right.
I agree. But it's funny how people want to separate that.
I know. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense. If you're basing your life, which so many Americans do, on Christian values, never mind all the rest of the religions, those are based on a book that's telling you there's another realm. You know, and it's alive in our days every day, and you can pray to it and speak to it, and you can ask things of it. And all of that stuff that happens in religion is definitively paranormal. So how people can go from that to rolling their eyes about ghosts and goblins and vampires, I don't know. It's the same thing.
Right. Yeah, and we've tried to learn that as well. You know, I mean, there's certain aspects of the paranormal we'll jump in full force, and then there's others you sit there and you kind of roll your eyes and question, but it's like, why draw the line there?
Exactly. Why deny yourself the possibilities? Again, it's Hollywood. It's a fear mentality, which is the wrong thing. Everything in life is bad because that when there's fear involved, it's just makes it all wrong. But that's been pumped up and sensationalized through Hollywood movies. They're among the most fun things in the world to watch. I don't judge them. You know, I'll pay my money to see them too. But they have been the reason that people sort of cast this light on this whole world and forget that it's one inch away from, you know, from conventional religion.
Well, let's dive in with the little time we have left into a few of the other episodes. One that's always fascinated me is the whole concept. You know, I'm obviously a fan of Raiders of the Lost Ark and the Raiders films and the concept that the Nazis were always in search of these supernatural elements to give them an edge, which sounds like a great movie trope. But to know that it's real, there's real aspects to what they were doing.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
The Nazis. Talk a little bit about that.
The Ananurbe was the group within the Nazi world headed up by Himmler. And Himmler believed in, you know, all that stuff where he thought that there could be a supernatural power. He kind of had it. I'm not sure of that sequence of events for him historically, but he believed that he was, you know, that he was being called to this. He thought that he would be the next Hitler after Hitler. And so he had a very special feeling about himself. And he was, it was no coincidence that he was named Heinrich, because there was a very famous, there is a very famous historical king in Germany who was the uniter of the German kingdom, Heinrich the First. And so he saw himself as the legacy of Heinrich. He was, you know, the reincarnation of him. As such, all these kinds of pursuits that his sort of part of the his world was involved with made sense to him. I'm kind of making that up when I say that. That's, I'm surmising a lot there based on what I learned and experienced there. But it was all sort of hung on him, on Himmler for us. I forgot what I was going to say. So he had, I mean, they had big rituals. They reinterred the bones of Heinrich I in the cathedral that you can go to today. The bones aren't there now, but that was a part of a whole thing that they did. And it was a, he believed that he could tap into this stuff. So what we focus on, at least in one aspect of that show, is the Witches Division, which was a very well, lots of personnel involved. There were well-staffed division that did a whole accounting for all the witch trials that had happened throughout Europe. You know, again, we're off the hook in America. We have only one thing to talk about, you know, in that regard, the Salem witch trials, which is a very short, very definite period of witchery and persecution that happened in American history. Over there, it was hundreds of years. You know, it was just, it went on and on and on. And for whatever reason, people went after people for being witches. And it was just a way to, you know, get rid of your neighbor, steal some land, and all kinds of bad things went on under the guise of it. But the Nazis really suspected, or at least Himmler really suspected that there was power involved in this. So he wanted to know all about this. And I was shocked when we went to the Berlin, the National Archives in Berlin, and found all these folders, there's just wealths of fileage, big time records of all this effort that they made to find, to account for the witches, you know, literally like name by name of all these witches that they'd researched around the German Empire and so forth, and how they died and what they were accused of. And all of this, all these records were being kept for the purpose of perhaps using this supernatural power for Nazi domination. You know, they were very into it. They're not making it up with the Indiana Jones. They just made up the story.
Right. Fascinating story. And to think, you know, but again, you look back through all of our cultures, it's not so far-fetched. Well, it's far-fetched, but it's not so far-fetched to see that so many different wars, idea was to have something, an artifact that you would take forth with you. If it was the hand of a saint, the finger or the ear of a holy man or something, whatever could give you that edge going into war. And sure, the Nazis were just trying to stack the deck. But you look at what they accomplished and how devastating they were. It makes you wonder, were there aspects of darkness aside from that that man can do to man that they were able to tap into?
Yeah, you gotta wonder. I mean, they were operating on a whole nother level of evil, you know. You look at the machinations of Nazism, and it's so mechanized, you know, it's so ordered, it's so systematic in everything they do. To me, one aspect of talking about Nazis is to say, this is what's wrong when you look at the world too definitely, when you decide how it's going to be, instead of accounting for all the process and unaccountability in the world and allowing that to flow through your life, being more open to things. The Nazis were the opposite. They were the worst example of categorizing human beings and punishing them as a result of the categories they fell into. That's just a mindset that we all have at hand in our lives. We all have our left brain. And when you let that take your life over, which is so inviting for so many people, you're in big trouble, because the world isn't like that. And so they took that to a societal level. You know, they thought that they could remake the world as a result of it by applying all the principles of their idea of civilization, and therefore cleaning up the world and society to thrive under their way of thinking. That's just a strain of human thought that is very dangerous when taken down the road, and thank God it didn't work.
Well, that kind of leads us into the Temples of Doom, where you uncover clues about a bloody sacrifice in these remote caves and evidence of a supernatural war.
You're in Peru, am I right?
Yeah, I believe that's in Peru. Wildman investigates a deadly ancient cult by undergoing its most terrifying ritual.
There you go. I don't name these things. I'm just in them. This was an incredible archaeological. I mean, that sounds all dark and dangerous. It's actually an amazing, amazing show. One of the greatest experiences of my life was going to Peru. You know, you can go to Peru and go to Machu Picchu and do all the southern part, which is amazing, and I plan to go back there someday. The northern part of Peru gets into the Amazon. It's very dry and arid, and it's not the fabulous tourism to do in the world. But it's much more tribally oriented. You can really get into the ancient civilizations, and they're all very available. Amazing archaeological sites to see. I would watch that show just to see what we saw in Chavín, which is a place I'd never even heard of before I went down there, and then go north to see what's up towards the Amazon there. The famous part of that thing is the Chavín, the temple that we're talking about. And it was uncovered by this very famous archaeologist who's still working there, named John Rickey, I believe. And he has peeled back this whole culture of training for a priesthood that was done at this particular temple. And these people these young men, I suppose, would come from all around and be taken through this ritual of sacrifice and training and understanding, and then finally be led into this incredible tunnel system that's in the heart of this temple. And in order to come face to face with the god, with the literal stele of the god that is in the middle of it, sort of a jaguar god, and that freaking thing is still there. It's unbelievable. Thousands of years later, it's still there, and it sits in the middle of this temple. And you go down these things. And what these guys were doing, I ran into this over in Turkey with actually a Greek thing that was happening there, where they would use tunnels to sort of freak people out. And they take potions and, you know, herbal things that would sort of set them on a little drug trip. And as they were hallucinating, they'd go down these hallways, and the doctors, in quotation marks, would be standing over them and saying things and blowing fumes into this tunnel. And it was like this sort of special effects. It was a whole special effects thing that was happening in order to transport them to another realm. In this case, they would do some of that, but with the water. It was so amazing. They would use a whole series of canals, which they would direct the water from the local river through the temple. So you'd hear this sort of roaring natural sound within these tunnels. Then they used conch shells, a sort of conch shell thing, to blow the sound of jaguars into this tunnel. And so this particular novice, we're called, would be walking through this thing in a elevated state of mind, having these sensory experiences, and then come down the hallway and see, lit by a special light in the ceiling, the actual stele, the pillar of this jaguar god looking at them. And they'd have their experience with God.
Then would you shake your fist in the air and start yelling, Kalima, Shakti Di, Kalima?
That's you must have watched the show. That's exactly what I do.
No, just Temple of Doom reference there, folks. It's awesome, Don. I love the shows. I loved what you've done in the past. I'm looking forward to seeing you dive into our world deeper with the supernatural and the strange. Again, for you folks, it begins airing tomorrow on June 8th. You've got episodes Voodoo's Dark Magic, Demon Woods, The Nazi Supernatural Weapons, Temples of Doom, Devil's Swamp, Curse of the Druids, Curse of the White City, the 2-hour season finale, which will premiere on Monday, July 27th. Buried Worlds with Don Wildman is the series. Go set your DVRs for that now.
Can I ask you a favor?
Yeah, please.
Can I just plug? I want to stay in touch with people on this show. You know, I've been doing this stuff a long time, And this is new subject matter. So I'm just trying to learn how people think about it and what their experiences are. So I just wanted to plug my social media. So at Don Wildman is Twitter. And you can find me on Facebook easily, Don Wildman. I'm very personal about it, and I really will write you back. And what am I forgetting? Instagram. I think it's at Don Wildman on Instagram, too.
And we'll have on today's program, all of the different links to his social media, so you can reach out, contact him, tell him what your thoughts are on the episodes, your thoughts on these different paranormal concepts as well.
And they're going to hate me. They're going to hate me.
They're not. Listen, if the rest of the series plays out as well as the first episode, I think you've got another hit on your hands. And I mean, I've loved Mysteries at the Museum, of course. And, you know, I just love diving into history like you do and hearing all the strange elements of things that we take for granted or that we had no clue took place.
We've only scratched the surface on our conversation, so I hope maybe we'll have another one sometime soon.
Certainly. Well, let's, you know, once the series wraps up, let's dive back in and take a look and even try to arrange some contact with the fans that want to ask questions regarding what you experienced in this first season.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for tuning in. Stay safe. And we will keep in touch with you. Remember to keep checking our social media as well for new upcoming projects, specials, and those Travel Channel specials I just mentioned to you. That's it for this week. We'll be back again next week with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. That's Tim. I'm Dave. This is Darkness Radio.